When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
New week on the call-up, and we've got some call-ups to talk about here, which is the best part of the show, I think, and the most exciting part. I'm Aram Layton. He's Jack McMullen. We do have some slightly negative as well, just some struggles. Also, we still haven't really delved too deep into Jackson Holliday's situation. Don't want to rehash all the same points that you've heard ad nauseum at this point. We just kind of want to talk about where we see it and how I'd be looking at it, I guess, if I were in the front office for the Orioles and Jack in the same way. And we'll kind of talk about, you know, what the plan may be there and what may have went awry slightly and why we're at the end of the day not concerned, no matter how ugly that was in his debut. But most importantly, Joey Loperfido right now getting to the big leagues, friend of the program. Very excited about that. Addison Barger, not a friend of the program, but might as well be for, you know, how much we've been talking about him, how excited I was about him this year. So pumped about him with the Jays, and then plenty of others to kind of hit on, as well as some promotions and some things in between. Jordan Beck getting the nod. It's been really wild. I feel like since we talked and did that episode breaking down which hitters and pitchers we thought would get caught up, none of the pitchers got caught up, but that's usually how that goes at this point. But no, we've had a lot of the hitters called up since we did that episode a week ago, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, it was Loperfido, Beck, Barger, and Heston Kerstad. And Kerstad is a second-time call-up, so we don't really need to spend too much time on him. Interesting to note that he's just not finding himself in the lineup. He's getting canarioed a little bit, where like he goes up and then he's just buried on the bench. And it's like, oh, why are you up then? I guess he has to have a four-hit day whenever he finds himself in the lineup, a la Colton Cowser. Like, Cowser, was he going to play every day if he didn't stand on his head for 2 weeks?
No.
I have no idea, but he's earned himself an everyday role, and now it's up to Kerstad to, you know, come in cold once every 4 days and light the world on fire, I guess.
Yeah, which is, that's a tough place to be, and that's really tough for hitters, especially as you're trying to just get up and get acclimated. So that's the tough thing with Kerstad. And we were talking about in the Just Baseball show, and Peter had asked a question to me, actually, where he's like, I'm looking at their roster resource. Where does Kerstad fit in? And I was expecting that I could say, oh, well, you platoon him here or there. And I'm looking at it and I'm like, oh, shoot. I don't really know. Preferred left on left matchups. Like, if you'd rather him go left on left than Ryan O'Hearn, like, I was really starting to struggle to figure out where he fits into the lineup. And the reality is he doesn't really, unless you want to give somebody a day off or you, for whatever reason, prefer, you know, Kerstad doesn't have, you know, splits to the degree of O'Hearn, but I don't know if O'Hearn would have had splits in the minor leagues, you know, like he's having in the big leagues, and Kerstad could have much more dramatic splits in the big leagues. So the reality is it's a tough spot for Kerstad, and I'm sure the last thing that the Orioles want to do is canario him, as you mentioned. But at the same time, this is a team trying to win the World Series, and you know, you're bringing up the guy that is most ready to help you. And I think you could make the case that Mayo is as well, and probably would be a better platoon bat given that he's a righty and could spell the left-handed side. But I think they look at Mayo as, you know, a potential superstar, or at least a multi all-star big time building block, even more so than Kerstad. And you don't want to have him, you know, you can't canario Kobe Mayo. He's too good. I think Kerstad is right on the edge. Like, he definitely is too good for 90% of teams, but there's certain situations where, hey, man, you're just not going to get the reps as much as you'd like to see. You can't do that with a Kobe Mayo because he's a top 20 prospect in baseball. He's younger, and there's some things that he's still working on in the box a little bit more. I think to a degree with Kerstad, what you see is kind of what you're going to get, which is good hitter, above average power, really aggressive, and you just got to kind of take it where it comes from, and that's who he's going to be.
He's not just younger. I think he's 3 years younger. Like, there's younger, and then there's that. There's that difference. And why would you take every day at bats away from a 22-year-old when you've got a 25-year-old that's willing to fill in? Last Orioles question before we get to Lo Perfido. Is Connor Norby ever going to get to play a game in a Baltimore Orioles uniform? Probably not.
Honestly, guns in my head, I'd say no.
I'd say no, too. He's on year three in AAA. And like, you think year three in AAA or guy, right? You slap it on him and, you know, you're going to say, hey, thanks. You win the sportsmanship award, that kind of thing. Like, we're talking about a borderline top 100 prospect in baseball that has never really failed at the AAA level. I like, dude, trade him now. This is unbelievable that we have yet to see Connor Norby in an O's uniform.
And I think he's getting a little worn out up there. Because I mean, the last 15 games, he doesn't look like Connor Norby. And I wonder if it's just like, okay, what's the use to a degree? I wouldn't blame him for that mentality. You've been putting up numbers for what, 200 plus games now in AAA. So the last 15 games, by the way, striking out 27 times.
Ooh,
Connor Norby. They're at the point now where he's up there for so long, he's probably getting a little frustrated and a little just stale. And now I think the Orioles are getting to the point where they might be hurting his value just with how much time that he's spending there as he encroaches on 24 years old. And I mean, the guy's playing all over. He's played left. He's played right. Of course, he's going to play second base, which is his natural position. But I mean, I'm sure he'll turn it around and he'll start swinging it well again. But when you're looking at this stretch here of 20 games, even 19 games, he struck out 30 times. That's not Connor Norby. And I do wonder if there's just like a level of frustration. How can you be so bought in to go to the AAA yard every single day when it doesn't matter what you do?
I don't think you can. And so we're recording on Tuesday morning. On Monday night, it was like 10:30, 10:45 p.m. I was thinking about slapping you and our friend Peter Flaherty of Baseball America in a text. And I was just going to pose the question to you like this. If you are the manager of the Norfolk Tides and you're Mike Elias visiting Norfolk, what are you saying to him? Like, how can you possibly keep his spirits up? And like, I was just trying to put myself in the shoes of a AAA manager dealing with a guy like this. Hey, man, keep doing you. What do you mean? I've got an 860 OPS. Like, hey, that time's going to come. Is it? I've got an 860 OPS. I'm going on year three here. Like, you run out of the cliches to convince a guy to keep on chugging.
Yeah, and I'd say like, oh, the better you play, the better chance you get out of there. But no, maybe they want to clutch on to you a little bit more. You know, now maybe you're a guy that, oh, I can't trade him for a rental, blah, blah, blah. I think at the end of the day, though, that's what you have to subscribe to, which is the better you play, the better chance you get out of here. More teams are going to want you. More teams are going to be interested. And I think with the Orioles, though, you got to move this guy at this point. And I hope they do for his sake. And you know what? They're going to add. Of course, they're going to add. So if they're going to try to make some moves. You don't want to trade Mayo. You don't want to trade Basayo, who homered twice the other day, by the way, starting to heat up again. Norby's probably one of those guys that headlines a package along with the Beavers and others. And, you know, they could go get a good player. So I'm hoping that I honestly hope that he does not play a game in an Orioles uniform, because that either means he's 28.
Yeah.
Or something catastrophic happened at the big league level.
For sure. So we're going to, open this show with the O's and then cap it with the O's? But we have a certain Astro to talk about, Arm.
Yeah. Friend of the program, Joey Lo Perfido, finally getting the call. And it was a nice little week for him. By the way, we just put out a new content series I'm really excited about on the YouTube. It's linked in the episode description. I'd love for you to check it out. Every week I'm going to be doing this, like basically the week in recap. Everything that you need to know that's going on in the minor leagues across every single level, basically. This week in minor league baseball would be like the closest thing to compare it to, and just say, like, from a data perspective, who performed, video, and walk you through it. Let me know what you guys think. And if everyone continues to love it, we'll definitely do it every single week. I think it'll be a really easy 8 to 10 minute way to get you primed up on what happened last week in the minor leagues and what to look out for moving forward. Of course, Loperfido's call-up was one of the things that we mentioned in there as one of the big stories, because in that same span, that same day, he hit the 13th home run of the season for himself, which, you know, paces minor league baseball and all of professional baseball, actually, and then gets the call-up shortly after that for an Astros team that's desperate. I mean, they are desperate. There's no other way around it. And they're not hitting the way that they need to hit. And we talked about it on the Just Baseball show where they're not slugging. So Loperfido, you hope a guy that is leading professional baseball in home runs can help you do that. I see a lot of people talking about the whiff. And I saw a couple like local radio hosts say, if Joey Loperfido becomes Joey Gallo, would you take that? And I'm like, whoa.
What?
We're just looking. That's stat line scouting there, right?
Oh, like, my gosh.
Yes, he's striking out at a 30% clip. He has an in-zone contact rate of 82%. He has an overall contact rate right around 74, 75%. He is going to strike out because he's 6'4", and he's got power, and he's got long levers. But he is not a 30-hit tool, 70-power guy. He's a 40-hit tool, 60-power guy with a good approach, and I just don't think, yeah. You know, I mean, Joey Gallo was borderline a 20-hit tool,
right?
So like, that's not what you're getting here, and you're getting a lot different of a player. I think a guy that isn't going to just launch balls straight up in the air. There is a I think lofty launch angle, but it's not that. Sure. I think at the very least, though, you're getting a spark plug here that you're hoping can crush righties and run into some home runs and be a piece. But the thing is, he actually hits lefties pretty well. And, you know, I think you got to feel really good about what he's doing, even with the K rate being slightly elevated.
So he's got 29 hits at this point, 13 of which homers. So he's got 16 hits that are not a home run. Joey Gallo is cut from a very unique cloth. I don't know if we're ever going to see another Joey Gallo. That's a guy that got to 100 career homers before he got to 100 career singles. That's not Joey Loperfido, guys. Like, come on, let's be better than that.
Yeah.
The other thing is Gallo never, like, I got to pull up the Baseball Reference page. I really don't think he ever hit 290 in the minor leagues. I think he was a 240 hitter and he was flirting with 30 homers every single year in the minor leagues. And frankly, he wasn't in the minor leagues for very long, but Loperfido in 2022 between low A and high A hit 316. He hit 280 last year and climbed to triple A. He's hitting 287 this year in 25 games. That's not Gallo.
Yeah. So Gallo, it's a great point that you bring up. Gallo hit over 270 twice, one at rookie ball, and then another time in high A and double A. But in triple A, or double A and triple A, he was a 240 hitter. And full season ball, his second year in baseball, he was a 250 hitter. And also just striking out at a ridiculous clip.
An egregious clip.
Not even 30%. It was going to be more than that. And also, remember, the pitching that Joey Gallo was facing in 2013 in the minor leagues, nowhere near the pitching that Joey... And that's not to say that Joey Loperfido is going to be a better player than Joey Gallo, because Gallo comes with great defense.
Made a lot of money.
And you know, when you can hit 42 home runs in a minor league season, you're kind of cut from a different cloth. I just think the comp is selling Loperfido short, because even if he doesn't realize all of his power, he can still be a good baseball player with the ability to play multiple positions, the ability to swipe bags. He is a decent enough bat to ball guy that if he's not hitting 35 home runs, he can still be a regular. If Joey Gallo is not hitting 30 home runs, he's toast. But the difference was he did it a lot, and that's why he became a really good player. So we're not saying it's like, oh, Loperfido, it's a disappointment if he's Gallo. He's way better than that. It's just they're totally different. And Gallo has only really one. Gallo had one path. And we always talk about, you know, the future roles. And this is an example of that. A guy like Gallo would have ranked lower for me on top prospect list because he has one path to becoming an everyday big leaguer, and that's hit a ton of home runs. Loperfido's path to being the best big leaguer is hitting plenty of home runs, but there's a path for him being an above average regular if he hits 20 home runs, which is a lot of line drives, walks, versatility, stolen bases. And, you know, I think the hit tool can continue to get better too, which is an underrated aspect of Loperfido too. So just to kind of tie a bow on the conversation with him too, is where does he fit in with this Astros team? First base is probably the place that he's played the least in terms of just, honestly, I don't know if that's necessarily true, because his first year in college, he played a lot of first base when he cracked that lineup at Duke. And then, you know, later on, he played a little bit of first on the Cape. But I felt like the last few years, his focus had most definitely been in the outfield. And at a professional level, yes, he's been rotated in at first, but I do feel like outfield's been a priority. So first base defense at the big league level, I'm sure will be a little bit of an adjustment. But at the end of the day, like, I think that's the obvious spot where he's going to get run, considering the performance of Singleton and Abreu. But I also think that there's room for him in the outfield too. So if you're, you know, a dynasty owner and you're trying to decide, you know, what you want to do with Will Profito, if you want to trade for him, pick him up, whatever the situation is, I think he's got as favorable of a situation of a guy that's getting called up, because not only does he have the runway at first base, even if some, in some weird way, Abreu picks up, there's room for ABs elsewhere with the way that, you know, I know Myers is slugging, but with the way that Myers, I think, is going to hit ultimately as we get a larger sample, and the way Chaz McCormick's been hitting thus far.
So can I tell you, I think his spot is going to run him out in center a lot against right-handed pitching. Mm-hmm. I could absolutely see that world. And I know that he likes turning to Dubon a good bit when a lefty's on the hill. I don't know Jake Myers' splits off the dome, but it really feels like if they wanted another lefty in the lineup against right-handed pitching, they would just sit Myers at this point. Because, yeah, you mentioned he's slugging in 50 plate appearances like we talked about on the Just Baseball show. But, you know, he's hitting under 220. Like, he's getting on base at a 280 clip. Like I could absolutely see where this guy's spending half to slightly more than half of his time in the lineup in center field, and then he's playing some first base as well. Do you think he plays at all against left-handed pitching?
No, I don't think so, because he probably shouldn't. He's capable. But if I'm the manager, you know, and like just taking away the, like, I want to see Will Profito play every day lens, you still are paying Jose Abreu a lot of money, who has historically crushed lefties. So if you want to try to get him going, and you need to, unless you're releasing the guy, he's got to play and they're not going to release him. That, and he does, you know what, at the end of the day, Abreu at least deserves that. He's earned that through his career by being what he has been as a player and the professional of all professionals. And I'm sure even through these struggles as being a professional, from everything I know about him, just from what I've heard. Your point though on Myers, 110 career WRC plus against lefties, 81 against righties. So no brainer, run him out into center field. He's a better option than Dubon. And I think that's going to be the one area. Then first base as well, when you want Myers out there, I think is another option. But I think they might go Singleton and Abreu still for a little bit longer at first. And then certain days where they want to just give him a day off, or they just still like the matchup for Myers, or they want to prefer center field, whatever it is, Lope will get some starts at first. But I'm with you. I actually think he gets more looks in center, which is fun. And I think is better long term for him. And I think a little bit more natural at this point for him as well. I'm interested to see how he grades out defensively. He's a really good athlete. I know he's worked hard out there and he's a really smart player, but you know, he hasn't been playing center field his whole life. So it'll be interesting to see how he grades out. And the thing that Will Profito is going to have to do is either provide much more offense than Jake Myers or close the gap defensively, because Myers is a superb defender in center field. He's got to show that, hey, I'm at least an above average defender in center field. Or else, you know, I think that's where you could start to say, okay, Myers, at the very least, if neither of them are hitting, Myers can give us really, really good defense. But I think they're going to weather the storm if Will Profito is slow out of the gate because of what he can bring them. Whereas you already know what you're getting with Jake Myers. Will Profito, okay, slow first 20 ABs and then starts to click for him. That could look like tons of homers and, you know, a dynamic left-handed hitter at the top of your lineup. You know, so I think he's going to get a lot of opportunity. I don't think he's going to get off to a slow start. I think there's going to be swing and miss, but I think he's going to catch a lot of home runs. Like, I think he's going to hit balls hard, and I think he's going to make the most of the situation. I'm biased there for sure, and there's no way I was going to come on here and say, I don't know if he's ready. But I do think that he has done some really good things, and I'm excited to see him get up there. By the way, for those worried about the K rate, over the last 15 games, 25%. So it's continued to drop, you know, as we continue to go on with the season here. And if you eliminate that 0 for 6er, you know, with 6 Ks, it definitely looks a lot better than that, too.
100%.
So who do you want to get to next?
I'm thinking Jordan Beck, Colorado.
I agree. Jordan Beck gets the nod. Will make his debut against the Marlins later today. You know, if you're listening to this, he may have already made his debut. I love it. And we talked about it in the call-up episode where, you know, we drafted imminent big leaguers. And I kind of made the point that Beck could probably use more ABs compared to some of these other guys. But at the same time, why just continue to get ABs in Albuquerque? Like, I might as well just see what he can do in Colorado and with the Rockies, especially given their situation right now as one of baseball's worst teams and the way that Beck has been swinging it. There's some mechanical adjustments that I'll get into that I like that I think are helping him make more contact. But I know you're excited about this. Beck's a guy that I know you've liked, and he's been playing amazing this year. It just gives them some life, and I mean, gives them something a little bit refreshing over there that, hey, if he struggles, that's fine. I think the Rockies start to look at next year as a time where they can start to shift a bit and start to be a bit more competitive. And if Beck can get the growing pains out this year, if there are some, you know, next year you can start to really focus on making that step in the right direction.
Yeah, 100%. The reason I think I like Beck is because he has become a more prolific base stealer than I think anybody thought he would when he was at Tennessee. And he's done it at a high efficiency. Like, that's really important to me. When you are a power speed blend guy, you better be stealing bases at a high efficiency, because you're not going to find yourself standing on first base very often if you are a power guy that is geared to lift, geared for the alleyways. When you are at first base, when do you put your team in the best, you know, situation to have a man in scoring position? And I think that he has done a really good job of, yes, taking his walks. He's going to punch out a good bit. But when he does find himself at first base, he's making sure that he can find himself in scoring position. And I think that those are how the tooled out players become winning players. And that's like a really important thing to me, because we see so many toolsy dudes not get to first base. And when they do, they're just off and running because they're trying to prove something. Colorado did this with Sam Hilliard. These guys were teammates in Albuquerque. Like, this dude is just so much better than tooled out Sam Hilliard types. And I use Sam Hilliard as a comp a lot, because he, like, every organization in baseball has a Sam Hilliard. Tampa has a Cameron Meisner. Miami, who's Miami's Sam Hilliard?
It was Peyton Burdick for a minute. Yeah,
right? Like, everybody has a Sam Hilliard. How do you separate from that one guy in every organization? By being really efficient and by making swing changes that I know you're going to highlight.
I was about to literally use that as a transition right into the swing adjustments. Minor stuff, but that's all it takes when you're a big power guy. And like, he put up good numbers last year, but I was kind of just concerned of against consistently better competition. Like, are those moves going to be repeatable? And is he going to get chewed up a little bit? Because the whiff rates were kind of high. He's cut the K down. I think he's still going to be, like you said, a guy that's going to strike out more than what we've seen so far in AAA. But he has improved his out-of-zone contact rate significantly, which is definitely a way to hedge strikeouts when you can spoil tough pitches or when you make a bad swing decision. I guess, you know, even with two strikes, a chase swing that you can at least spoil or put in play. With Beck, a couple things. One, the thing that really bothered me with his swing last year was he has this leg kick, which, you know, it's fine. Like, guys, a lot of guys have the big leg kicks and succeed with it. Veen brought it back and it's been great. But he had this leg kick that had, and I think we talked about it when we talked about the Rocky system. He would get up and then there would almost be like a hitch in the leg kick. And I'm like, man, that's really hard to time up. A leg kick and then another move when it is up there hanging in the air. Really, really hard to time up. Makes you feel very rushed. Also, if you look at where his hands are and the angle of the bat when he was slotted, the bat was very much pointed directly upward. And a lot of guys are trying to get it, you know, flatter, so much easier to get into your slot. So those two things now, you look at his swing this year, Barrel is a lot flatter, not as loud of a tip. So it's easier for him to get in the zone earlier. And then he still has the leg kick, but it's way more rhythmic now. Now it's I'm loading, I'm getting up into it. It's not I'm getting into it. And then I have this like another little up and down with my leg that just makes it really hard to repeat and delays my ability to get it back down and be in a position that's ready to hit before the ball is on me. So cleaning up that leg kick, bad angle, that is enough for me when I see numbers improving to say, okay, that could make a difference. Then you have a 10% jump in out of zone contact rate that I think is legitimately from that. I think he has more adjustability. I think he's earlier now, and I think that's helped him a ton. And you also have an in zone contact rate that's jumped by 2% as well. And the chase rates have dropped a little bit too. So I think that's enough. He's going to swing and miss, but he's got good power. He elevates consistently. And the other thing that I love about him in Coors is it's all fields, man. He catches the ball deep. He'll drive it the other way. He can turn stuff around inside, especially now that he seems to be much more consistently on time. I think Beck might surprise some people at the big league level, and myself included, because you know I was skeptical with some of those moves as to whether he would be able to hit enough. And it looks like he might be able to now.
This is safely a see what you got guy. There are some prospects that are not a see what you got situation type guy. Like Pete Crow Armstrong coming on, you know, when somebody hits the IL is like not great, I don't think. But Jordan Beck coming on when Nolan Jones hits the IL is fine. Would you bump Zach Veen from double if Nolan Jones hit the IL? No. But like Beck was already performing enough. This is one of those where, you know, he's considered a really good prospect for you in your organization, but he's not a top prospect in your organization. I think this is see what you got candidate number one in the National League. And I love that he's going to get this opportunity. I have no idea how long Nolan Jones will be out for, but they got to feel okay with Jones out, knowing that, you know, they're going to get to at least give back a long-term audition.
Yep, absolutely. A guy that I'm hoping gets a long-term audition is Addison Barger, and he just picked up his first big league hit. Man, this big league thing's tough. It really is. Starts, I think it was 0 for 12, or I don't know what it was, but he's 1 for 15 now. Only 4 strikeouts, and now I think he's going to start to settle in. I think he needed to see one go through. Yeah. But again, it's one of those situations here where you have a guy get called up, and he's already played third base, right field, and left field. The Blue Jays. So they've had him at three different positions already. And yeah, you know, that's enough in itself to say, okay, that's a lot to handle. But so far, I mean, not getting blown up by any means. And, you know, I think the one area is he's been very aggressive, and especially on fastballs. This is a trend that I need to continue to dive into is guys get up to the big leagues, or mostly the big leagues, but sometimes to aggressive promotions. And they just become so aggressive for heaters because they feel like they're never going to see him. And they feel like if they don't clip that heater, they're done. And that's like just the classic adjustment to the big leagues type of thing. Because, I mean, he was chasing heaters at a 22% clip, or actually less than that, like a 20% clip before the call up. And then now, you know, he has been swinging at just about every heater that comes his way. Small sample, he'll settle in. I think he'll be fine. But talking about what the Jays are getting here in Barger, guy that can play right, 70 arm. He hasn't played much left, but they can throw him out there. I know he had like one bad read out there, but I prefer him in right. Can fill in at third for you too, which is nice. Nobody with this kind of power and this violent of a swing should have an 86% in zone contact rate, but here we are. Barger has one of my favorite swings of the year. In AAA, the ball that was 6 inches inside, he crushed it and not only, you know, hit it for a home run, or not only hit it, but hit it for a home run fair. He, I think, is going to make an impact. I do. If they give him enough time, if he doesn't get enough time, I get it because the situation up there. But I mean, he pretty much checks every box so far this year. 90th percentile of 107 in those 20 games, a chase rate below 25%, and an end zone contact rate of 86%, driving it to all fields, hitting the crap out of the ball, walking nearly as much as he's striking out. I mean, Barger's doing everything that you would want to see.
Yeah, he was fully deserving of getting the call up. And this is, you know, like, hey, it's all right if a guy's slow out of the gates. Not everybody's going to hit a 3-run homer their first time up in the major leagues. And I think that's what a lot of people are expecting now. Like, a lot of people are expecting immediate production and immediate theatrics because you see it, you know, from enough prospects. It's what's it called? Availability heuristics. It's like, because you see it in the viral clips, you assume that every prospect does that. You see Jackson Chourio go yard in his second game, and you see him rob a homer in his second game. You think every prospect does that. That's not the case. And I like the point that you made right away. This big league thing is really freaking hard. Mm-hmm. But the good news is they have an elevated utility guy here that's going to play each of the sore spots in that Toronto lineup right now. Like, IKF, give him a day. Let Barger play third base. George Springer really sucking it up. Let Barger play right for a day. There are so many different sore areas for Toronto that Barger can spell while and he's up.
What I love too, to that point is, you know, so Davis Schneider, they love him as a matchup dependent weapon, meaning soft throwing lefties, he crushes. Certain righties, he crushes. But they know that he's got that big blue zone at the top. And high carry heater guys, high velo guys, they just rather go with somebody else. Understandable when you've got these options. Barger's almost the perfect spell. Opposite side, and I think crushes velocity and turns around stuff sometimes that you're like, how did he get to that? Mentioning the fastball, you know, up. And it's just like, how is he that quick? And the bat speed's ridiculous. You look at the first hit, by the way, of his big league career yesterday. A curveball down and away that he pulls into the right center gap, 106 off the bat. Like, it is really special bat speed. So I do think he fits a role nicely for them there. And as you mentioned, just being able to have, you know, that super utility aspect, I think they're going to give him more time. I think he's going to get plenty of time. And again, those 14 at bats just haven't been bad. It's really just been, welcome to the big leagues, and you know you're not going to find as many holes, and you're not going to hit the ball 107 every single time like you were before. So I'm very excited about Barger if he's getting everyday run. And so far, I mean, they've pretty much been playing him pretty consistently. I mean, you're looking at, I think, only one day off so far, if I'm not mistaken. If that, I'm looking at the schedule. I don't know if the Blue Jays played on the 25th, but game logs wise, we have a game the 24th, game the 26th, game the 27th, game the 29th. So at least one off day in there. But for the most part, if he's playing every other day or you know, 2 out of 3 days, you got to feel really good about the opportunity he's getting. And I do think that ultimately he will make the most of that.
Yeah, 14 ABs is also 4 games. If you want to look at it like that, do you know how many people have a shitty 4 games? It's like, that's a tough weekend. Like, every single player on the planet has a tough weekend. So we have to understand that 4 games is not enough to say, oh, all right, Barger hype train is over, let's try again in 2 months.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think they understand that too. And again, some ABs have been really good. So I'm excited to see him get rolling here with the Jays. We're going to get to some promotions before wrapping up with Jackson Holiday. But before that, a quick break.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, so one of the best pitching prospects in baseball was just promoted. And then we also saw Cade Horton get pumped up to AAA. I was talking about Jonah Tong. No, we'll talk Jonah Tong to high A. But Cade Horton gets the bump to AAA. They're managing his innings, the Cubs are, to a degree. Like, I definitely think they're staggering him some so that he can be available for them later in this year. Yeah. This last time out in AA was his longest outing. He went 72 pitches, went 5 innings, 3 hits, no runs, no walks, 6 Ks, by the way. And it seems like he's kind of back to dialing it up. Seemed like he was just kind of easing his way in through the first few starts, still pitching great. But it felt like that was where he almost like he may have known that that was the last double A start. Let's start to really get fired up here and start to get dialed up to potentially be in the big leagues not too long from now. Horton gets to AAA, where I think it's going to be a good test for him to see how that stuff plays against more advanced hitters. He has been very fastball slider heavy this year, so that's something that I'm excited to see at AAA. Weirdly, the changeup hasn't been there for him. And that was a pitch that he discovered last year in the second half with an adjusted grip and really had success with it. There's going to be more pressure on that pitch to be there for him. I'm also interested to see how the fastball performs, because it's one of those that's going to outperform stuff plus models. It's a little bit of that cut ride, steel adjacent type of situation there. Would love to see how it performs against some more advanced hitters, because in double A, 39% chase rate on his heater. That might just be what the heater is, and that's awesome. But with more disciplined hitters, how does it look? I'm really excited because this is one of the best pitching prospects in baseball. And I think this is where it's kind of the final test before he gets a chance at the big league level.
He's such a freak, man. Is somebody going to tell him in AAA that, hey, it's really hard to throw strikes with the ABS system in play? I'm curious to see what his first ABS game looks like, because since he started pitching at Oklahoma, and he was pitching obviously before that, but since he started throwing in like the non-high school database, he is not walking guys at all. And that is the appeal with a guy like Cade Horton. It's what makes him the fourth best pitching prospect in all of baseball. And you think about the guys in front of him, they don't walk guys. We see a lot of dudes with crazy stuff. But the thing that separates Cade Horton is crazy stuff, but he keeps them off the base paths by his own volition. Like, he is not surrendering to hitters. And I'm excited to see the highest level of hitter that he will. I think he'll start this week against Omaha, which is a bunch of borderline big leaguers, I'd say. And then he'll start the following week against Columbus, which is a prospect-laden team. They're both in Des Moines. I can appreciate that. Two home starts to start your AAA career. But man, like, if he handles a prospect-laden team in Columbus and a seasoned vet team in Omaha, I mean, we're starting to really cook with gas, because he hasn't seen guys with ample big league service before. He's going to get the opportunity to face Miles Straw next week, which will be great. And I know, like, Miles Straw was the butt of a lot of jokes in Cleveland last year. At the end of the day, this guy signed a major league contract. Yeah. This guy, like, he has, what, 5 years of big league service under his belt. So that is a new level that pitching prospects need to deal with, and we'll see how he fares.
And I think kind of in preparation of that, threw the changeup a little bit more in that last outing, threw it 9 times as opposed to he was throwing it, I think, a little bit less than that each start. So it's good to see Horton kind of getting ready for that, I think, and preparing for that. Another guy getting to AAA that you might be able to see pretty soon is Ty Madden. And The Tigers brought him up from AA, and we had just talked about him and said, man, how much longer is this guy going to pitch in AA? And here we are. He's up in triple, rides a nice little stretch here where he's been good over his last two starts in double, coming off of 5 innings of scoreless ball, 1 walk, 7 Ks. Madden's, I'm curious where he fits in at the big league level, but there was no reason for him to be pitching in double A anymore. He's 24. He's very advanced in terms of his ability to pound the zone, his mental wherewithal. And I mean, when you're looking through the first 4 starts, 32% strikeout rate, 4% walk rate, that's 22 Ks, 3 walks. Fastball's been all in the zone. Slider's been all in the zone. And another guy that the changeup hasn't quite been there for him as consistently this year, but I think there'll be more pressure on it to be there and some focus for it to be there in AAA. Also mixing in that cutter and the occasional curveball. I think Madden's going to just keep rolling in trips.
Is the stuff better than you thought it was?
I think we talked about that, right? Where it was like the fastball ticking up and then also improving in shape. I just did not really see that coming. So yeah, to be getting the uptick in fastball velocity, but most importantly, that the shape as well. Stuff is definitely better than I thought it would be.
I think we talked about fastball shape, but like on a pitch by pitch basis, is the slider better than maybe you thought it was too? Like I'm curious what makes Madden good when he is, you know, frankly, like one of the guys left behind in a really good Tigers system right now.
I would say the slider command is okay. What really stands out to me, just to be able to spot it the way that he has. And the confidence in it. I would say the fastball is the biggest surprise, just how good it is. We knew he threw hard, but you know, just seeing the end zone whiff and seeing that the ride that all of a sudden he's able to get, I was a little concerned that it might be a little straight. That paired with the slider command, I think we always knew the slider would be good. And then even mixing in a changeup that when he's feeling it is good. The stuff is just more well-rounded for sure than I was expecting. And I mean, the pitchability is just, I don't know if anyone really saw this level of pitchability, right? I mean, coming out of the draft, I'm trying to remember, but I don't know if this level of pitchability was really envisioned.
He was good. Like, he was not a pitchability guy by any stretch. It was like, oh, he was one of the best pitchers in the Big 12. Like, he was one of the best pitchers in the country. And we knew the strikeouts were there, but I think everybody just saw a guy that threw really, you know, hard and good. Like, he was, you know, sitting, what, 94, 95 in college? Like, he was just your classic, you know, Friday guy at Texas. And, you know, I don't think anybody looked deeper than simply that, where he was power guy beating college hitters.
Yeah, no, I agree. And now just to see the finesse side and knowing that he loves to dive into how he can make his arsenal the most effective, like, he's going to be a guy that handles promotions quite well. And I think this is going to be another good test for him. Another name is Jonah Tong. And Jonah Tong, I mean, thank goodness. I didn't want to see him just dominate again in low A. Let's see what he can do in high A. Mets prospect. Tong has been crazy. I talked about him in the YouTube short form YouTube video as well. His fastball, opponents are hitting 121 against it so far this season, with a 48% end zone whiff rate and a 22% swinging strike rate. So the thing with, and we've talked about him, so I won't rehash too many of the same points, but basically you had a guy with an over-the-top delivery that was generating 20 inches of IVB when he was sitting 90-91 last year, seventh round pick out of Canada. Now he's sitting 93. And when you're getting 20 inches of vert at 93 miles an hour, that fastball goes from above average to plus, and when he's forwarding with 94, 95, it's flashing better than plus. Then you add the fact that his best pitch is a curveball working off of that is legit old school 12-6 downer. That's a tunneling nightmare. And the harder you throw a curveball, the better it is. It was more low 70s last year. Now he's throwing it at 76, 77. With that kind of depth and that kind of downward bite, that's a big difference. And then he adds this slider that I think he was kind of missing, that horizontal. He was always a vertical guy. Now adds the horizontal, and hitters are getting pieced up so far. Like, that's the result. They're hitting .115 against him, 36 Ks, 5 walks before he goes to Brooklyn. And yes, I will be taking the N all the way to Brooklyn to go watch Jonah Tong throw at some point.
I was going to ask you, is it the Q to the 3? But you nailed it. It's the N. What neighborhood are you in? Tribeca?
No, I wasn't in Tribeca. I'm on the west side.
West side. Is that West Village, or is
I'm
that
in the West Village greater area? Yes.
West Village greater area. You take the N to Coney Island.
Yes.
And that's how you go see Jonah Tong.
Don't take my advice, dude. I've taken subways the wrong way so many different times, looked up from my phone and been like, oh no, where am I? The N, it worked for me last time. I think it'll work again.
Go back to the well, man. Whatever works, works. Is he, you had him at 15 when we just did the Mets 2 weeks ago?
And we were the only people that have ranked this guy for sure.
Yeah.
Timing worked in our favor there for sure. But
timing for sure worked in our favor. But you've got him at 15 now, midseason update. Where do you think he sits?
Depending on how it looks in Brooklyn, and I think it's going to look really good in Brooklyn. If you ever go to a Cyclones game, or if you ever find yourself in New York City, it's a little bit of a pain to get there. It's like an hour and change on the subway. But if you want to go catch a minor league game, such a cool park, MCU Park, with the Coney Island rides in the background, and just, it's just a great energy. They do a really good job there. The one thing though is the wind really blows in off the water. And Jonah Tong's a guy that I think, dominating at the top of the zone, the way that he's going to get beat is by homers. and you ain't hitting many homers. And like Brooklyn is a great, these guys are playing. It reminded me of like high school ball when you're playing in like a massive, massive field. Like these guys are playing legitimately like 100 and something feet off of the infield. I would say dirt, but it's turf. They are not playing deep at all. So I think Tong may just have a lot of confidence in the zone in Brooklyn and just pound it and feel like he can just keep doing what he's doing. I'm expecting this to keep rolling. 60% fastball usage, like not that egregious, to be honest, no. When it's that good at low A. And I think he can keep doing that in high A. I think he mixes in the slider and the curveball enough to where this is going to work. Working north and south is going to allow him to crush, to pick apart,
right?
I think left-handed hitters. And then righties, of course, you're always going to have a little bit more of an advantage. And he's got that horizontal slider as well, too. When are you fully buying in on the Jonah Tong, or are you already bought in on the Jonah Tong just kind of hysteria right now, which is, you know, deserved?
I'm pretty close to bought in at this point. Give me another three starts. I think three high A starts. If this guy is rocking an ERA lower than two at that point, and like I see him just killing, I think I'm fully in at that point. I could absolutely see a world where he is a top 10 prospect in that Mets system by the All-Star break.
Yeah. And so what does fully in mean? What do you envision there? It's just fully in on the fact that he's a legit prospect and we're going to see what's going to happen. Or are you willing to say like, oh, I'm fully in that this guy can be, you know, a big league four or, you know, has a chance to be a middle rotation arm if he keeps on this path?
No, I'm already in on him being a legitimate prospect and we should see this thing through.
For sure.
I think what fully in means in 3 weeks is you can start thinking about life with Jonah Tong in Queens in like 2 years.
And you're keeping up with every start just about.
Every start.
We're already looking, but like it gets to the point where it's what did Tong do today?
So he would enter the Ty Madden level where like he's not a top 100 prospect, but he's a guy that I'm checking in on every start because I do feel like this guy is a big league starting pitcher. Mm-hmm.
And there's not a ton of guys that are not top 100 and are big league starters that aren't just, you know, back end of the rotation guys. So that's a talented group of tweeners there that I think Tong could absolutely find his way in.
It's the just missed clump, really. Like any pitcher that is on Just Baseball's Just Missed, they are starting pitchers.
Yeah, and if that slider keeps performing the way that I think, again, that's the one thing is like, is it going to perform the same way, or is it just because hitters are just so domed up from the fastball? Right. Like that's the thing that I'm really interested to monitor there and keep up with. I'm trying to make sure we didn't miss any more promotions before we wrap up with Jackson Holliday. I don't think that there was anything really major worth noting on the promotion front. I did want to just mention that you finally got Junior Caminero healthy and heating back up. Those two home runs were really nice to see. Mets pitching prospects in general. Again, that's in the YouTube video. But if you're a Mets fan, you got to watch that thing because we did 5 minutes on how every freaking pitcher in the Mets system at every level just absolutely shoved. My live look at Nolan McLean was really impressive. He just continues to pitch with so much confidence out there. So that was fun to see as well. I think that's really it for the most part. And we'll just wrap up with Jackson Holliday, because I think we're going to start to see a lot more promotions in a couple weeks. But for now, I think we're probably still another week or two away from any more. I think usually we get those promotions in droves, I feel like. And I think those start to come in, what, a couple weeks into May, where guys that are really performing get the bump up.
Yeah, post Cinco de Mayo.
Post Cinco de Mayo.
Post Cinco de Mayo. I'm going to use that as like a checkpoint moving forward. Yeah, Cinco de Mayo is a big one for prospects.
Yeah, GMs really plan around that, I think.
Yeah.
Jackson Holliday is already back with Norfolk and has played two games there. I don't want to rehash so many of the same points that have been talked about everywhere all the time. All I really want to talk about is what does he have to do to get back outside the obvious? And do we think that they are a little bit nervous about bringing him back prematurely? Because then if he comes back and struggles again,
yes,
it's really hard to optically handle that. And I think is also really hard on Holiday's mental. Like, do you feel like we're probably going to see him there in Norfolk for, how about this? Does he get back up to Baltimore before the All-Star break?
No, right after the All-Star break. Like, that was the date that I was going to mention to you. I was like, we can't do this. And I don't even want to call it a flash in the pan thing anymore, because he's the number one prospect in baseball, because we believe that sheer dominance of the minor leagues is like what should be expected from Jackson Holiday. We can't take 2 weeks of domination of AAA to say, all right, Jackson's ready to go, let's do it again. Because what happened with Holiday was like, and I'm not trying to creep into this guy's mind, I'm not assuming anything mentally, but you couldn't watch that 10-game sample in Baltimore and tell me that it was entirely physical. So much of that had to be mental. It's so much of that had to be the hurdle that he was trying to get over, where he is the top prospect in all of baseball. He is the son of his father making his major league debut. And
wearing Cal Ripken's number.
Yeah, wearing not Cal.
Not Cal.
I think Bill Ripken's number.
Bill Ripken's number.
Their dad, yeah. But man, like, I don't see a world where, like, hey, he balls out for a month. Okay, you're ready, let's go again. He needs to, like, get bored in AAA, I think, before he gets up. And I think that answer is All-Star break.
And just to contextualize just the kind of mental aspect of it, too, fastballs were just dismantling him. So I thought it was a little bit of timing. And then, you know, when your timing's off as you're trying to stick in the big leagues with all of that pressure, it's got to really mount on you. And then all of a sudden you start really overthinking your ABs. I mean, for Holiday to struggle the way that he did against fastballs, it's just kind of uncharacteristic. And that's why I think he's going to be fine and settle back in. But we're talking about, it's a small sample. He saw 30 fastballs roughly that were 94 plus miles per hour, but he pretty much swung and missed in almost all of them. And that part is pretty surprising. And then when you look at just the fastballs in general, he saw 43 four-seam fastballs. I don't know how many of those were in the zone, but he had an in-zone whiff rate of 56% on fastballs. Like, that is not who he is. And just to kind of back that point up, if you go to 2023, and I understand the big leagues are a different beast, blah, 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 I get it. But this was a guy that was younger than the pitching at every single level and got to AAA really early and still did a lot of these same things. Against 93 plus last year, fastballs 93 plus miles per hour, hit 358, 507, 566. With an in-zone contact rate of 80%. So to me, that sample, whether it, I know it's not the big leagues, but that holds a lot of weight. We saw him look very comfortable in spring training against good arms. I don't think that it is fair to really take too much away from the debut, other than the fact that he, it turns out, is not a robot that is unaffected by everything. Because that's what it seemed like up until that point. Even when he got called up, it was like, oh, nice. Yeah, I'm excited. You know, and it seemed like he just was almost like a warrior that was like created for this, that just has the emotional skills and the mental wherewithal that just no human has unless you're like bred to be a professional athlete. And I think we saw that, hey, you know, he's human. And I think that's really all I took away from it. And I think the thing to focus is, okay, does this fastball trend continue? I don't think it will, based on what we saw last year. And I'm sure that he knows exactly what he needs to work on. He's going to work on it. But I agree, it needs to be like crazy Jackson Holiday numbers for him to be back up. Otherwise, you can kind of take your time, or an injury. Of course, injury, then it makes a little bit more sense. And then it's not as much of an optic issue either. And I think it's a little bit less pressure where it's like, okay, I'm filling in. I don't need to be Jackson Holiday, all-star, number one prospect. I just need to be guy who fills a role with an emergency and be, you know, a replacement. So I think the next time up will be a lot calmer, easier. And yes, it might be higher stakes baseball, that good stuff. But I feel like he's going to have a lot more perspective. And other than the fastball thing, I can't really find much else of an issue.
For sure. It's kind of nice that the future is now thing is in the rear view. Also, Bill wore 5, Cal Jr. wore 8, Cal Sr. wore 7. So it's the first time since Cal Ripken Sr. Wore it. So you were right, Cal Ripken, but it was senior, not junior. Yeah, man, like, I'm totally with you. I think that when he comes up next, the stress needs to be not gone because it's not going to be gone, but it needs to be as close to buried as you possibly can. And like, obviously, local media, national media is going to talk about it. It's like, oh, he really sucked first time up here. What's going to happen again? I think injury is one where, yeah, it makes sense. Like, hey, he's here as a filler. Or after the All-Star break, it's, hey, we're making the push. We feel like you're ready after dominating for 2-3 months at the AAA level. I think it's a serious thing that I'm excited to see how he looks for the next couple months in Norfolk.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
The other thing, real quick, one more thing. I wanted to kind of piggyback on the mentality thing. Holiday and Skeens are approaching their call up, I think, in a very similar way, where Holiday, you're right, it was like, oh, nice, great. I'm achieving this that I saw already.
Mm-hmm.
The goals extend so far beyond getting the call for guys like that. It's ridiculous. And listening to Skeens talk about it, you know, media day and even like all the media hits that he's doing kind of leading up to this inevitable call up whenever it may come. He's like, yeah, it'll be cool. It'll be nice. But, you know, my goals extend far beyond a big league call up. Like, it's not just getting there. It's getting there and being effing great.
Yeah.
And that, I think, is the way that Jackson has been bred to think. And that, I think, is the way that, you know, Skeens has fostered internally to think. And it takes a new level, and really only top five, top 10 prospects in baseball think in that way.
Well, and when you're looking ahead like that, and then right when you take your first step in, you get clocked in the mouth.
Yeah. It's like, oh shit, I wasn't expecting this.
Yeah. How do you kind of reshuffle and get back into that specific moment and say, oh, well, I got to seize now before I can get there. And all those goals seem so far away all of a sudden. And now it's like, I got to just find my footing. And I think that's not going to happen the next time out. We have a fun week ahead, a really exciting player interview that I think you guys will like, a guy that we've talked about plenty on this show. We also have another team top prospect list that'll be coming out later this week as well. It'll be the Seattle Mariners, which is a very good farm. And then anything else on a scheduling perspective, Jack, that we're going to have going out this week to look out for?
I don't think so. Go watch the YouTube video that's in the episode.
Yeah, let me know what you got. Let me know what you think. I would appreciate that.
You and Peyton Guinness, who is a video mastermind, just hammered that thing. And it's like, I'm typically not good at the 10 to 15 minute videos. This was 12. I know you're going to shoot for sub 10 moving forward, but this 12 minutes went by in a blink. Like, I was watching, I was like, okay, it moves quick enough for my brain to, you know, kind of process and be ready to move on.
I appreciate it. And we're definitely going to be a little bit shorter next time, but all the Mets pitchers made it hard when you have every guy shoving it at every level. But excited to hear, you know, what people think about it. And yeah, I think we're going to keep doing it every week. And I think it'll be a good way to keep you up to date with what's going on in the minor leagues, in addition to the show. Of course, if you could leave a rating, help us grow it, that would be awesome. New Just Baseball merch drops. Check that out in the link. The link is in the episode description. I think you guys will appreciate some of the new stuff, even doggy bandanas out there. Yep. So I'm pumped about that.
Stickers are important.
All that, but some quarter zips, some nice stuff as well, too. And I'm pumped about what we got going on there as well. We'll talk prospects with you tomorrow.
Big money at Menards. Add comfort to your life with Menards' great selection of Serta mattresses. Find the perfect mattress that fits your size and firmness needs. Hurry in today and pick up a Serta gel memory foam mattress in a box on sale now through May 27. Take control of your comfort with Serta mattresses at Menards. And check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at Menards.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.